I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. What do you do? Your teenager is upset, not fitting in, or acting in an unusual fashion, and the doctor says, I think it's time we tried some prescription-strength antidepressants. What do you do? Increasingly, parents and kids are turning to the drugs. More than a million kids in America are on drugs like Zoloft, Paxil, and Prozac. Many of them are under the age of 12. The trouble for parents is that information about the safety of these drugs has become very conflicting. For months now, regulators in Britain have been warning that these antidepressants put kids at an increased risk for suicide. Now they're telling parents and doctors in Britain to stop giving the drugs to kids under 18. Well, this week in Washington, American parents had their chance to tell U.S. regulators about their children and their fears and anger. The FDA has issued an advisory, but says it's too early to take a stronger position. The FDA plans to review the matter and revise its stand this summer. Can parents and kids afford to wait? What are the real risks here? Some say these drugs are essential for the treatment of mental illness in kids. Others say the drug companies are using their muscle to keep the products on the market. There's also the accusation that doctors aren't giving parents the whole story. What do you think? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And today we will hear from people who have been looking very, very carefully at this controversy. We're going to start with Tom Woodward. He is one of the parents who testified in Washington earlier this week, and he's joining us on the line from North Wales, Pennsylvania. Tom, it's good of you to join us here on the program.
Well, thank you, Dick. I appreciate the opportunity to tell our story.
I understand your daughter Julie was 17 years old. Now, she just switched from one high school to another, and she was having kind of a hard time.
She was going through some issues that I would characterize as normal teen issues, problems kids have growing up. She was always a good student and was having some difficulty with her grades in her third marking period. She had taken the SATs and had scored uncharacteristically low for her, and she just wasn't herself. But we sought out some help, some counseling, and we were directed to a clinic that prescribed her Zoloft. But she had no history of self-harm or suicide, and after 7 days on Zoloft, she took her life. She hung herself.
What did the people who prescribed the drug tell you about Zoloft when they said that that would be a good drug for Julie?
Well, there were three different mental health professionals that we had talked to during this process, and all three gave us a constant refrain of these drugs are very safe, they're very mild, and an essential part of the treatment. And in addition, the prescribing information which we had received, which was 2.5 pages, indicated information that was benign, that talked about nausea, talked about other things, but it never mentioned the issue of suicide and that it might present an issue as far as self-harm.
Tom, can you take us back to those 7 days that Julie was on the drug, that the time from when she started taking Zoloft till the time she took her life? And I'm sure you've been over that time lots yourself. What do you see when you look back now?
Well, Dick, we really didn't know anything about antidepressants. We never had any history of depression in our families, and so we were coming at this new. But I've learned a lot about the subject since then, and what we know now is that Julie was experiencing a condition known as akathisia, and she was responding badly to the Zoloft that she had been given. She was exhibiting restlessness, agitation. She was there was some pacing. We found out after the fact that she had confided in her sister, and we have four children, and she has a sister that was 2 years younger. And she had at night had there was a fan in the room, and Julie had told her daughter Caroline that she felt that the fan was lifting her up off her bed and bring her to the ceiling. But we didn't get this information. We weren't able to connect the dots until after the fact.
Now, obviously, in the time you've had a lot of time to do research to look back at that. But, I mean, we're still both lay people when it comes to understanding this. Have you made up your mind that Julie took her life either as a result of or as a sort of contributing aspect of the drug? Or could she just have been a teenager who was really depressed and committed suicide?
We are 100% convinced that it was Zoloft that took our daughter's life. We have no doubt in our minds. We had a unique situation in that our immediate next-door neighbor, who's also the mayor of our town and had access to the police records, and we've known them for years, also was a former professor at the University of Pennsylvania and worked specifically in brain science. And he saw in the police reports that Julie had been given a prescribed medication, looked into it, and realized what she'd been on. And so he pulled up information for us and shared that with us early on. But this came as an absolute shock. This was not a child that was, this was not a straight line to what happened to her. She was excited about college. She had, her grades had gone up in the fourth marking period at school. She had retaken the SATs and had scored extremely well, 720 in the verbal. She was excited about school and looking forward to the future. She was a hopeful kid. And this drug, we're convinced, robbed her of that hope.
And you guys too. I'm sorry about that, and I sort of want to didn't mention that earlier. I should have. But
thank you.
What was the message, the one message that you wanted to get across to the FDA regulators in Washington when you decided to go public with this?
Well, the from the research that I've done and the things that I've read and the people I've spoke to who've been touched by this directly is that there is this information out there, or there's not complete information being given. And that was what my wife, Kathy, and I decided that we needed to do, was to get the word out so no other innocent families or children were affected by these drugs without going in at least in advance with warning and knowledge before the fact. The FDA, I'm concerned, has not been doing an adequate job of protecting the American public with this. I really do believe that more information has to be given to people so they can make informed decisions about these drugs. In my estimation, from what I've learned, I believe these drugs, just like they've done in England, these drugs should be banned in this country for children. They're developing minds. They don't have research and data that show how these drugs affect young children. And I think that they need to have those warnings in place. I believe that parents should be informed before the fact of what these issues are. And I think that the pharmaceutical companies and the regulatory agencies need to make sure that professionals, health professionals out there, understand what these risks are.
Now, Tom, you'll know there are differing opinions on this. I want to just have you hang on for half a second here while we hear from Dr. Suzanne Vogel-Shabilia. She is joining us now from the studios of WDEQ in Pittsburgh. And Dr. Suzanne Vogel-Shabilia has been listening in. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You're a psychiatrist. You are chair of child and adolescent policy for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. You have a lot of professional experience that you bring here, but you also have direct family experience with these drugs. And I wondered if having heard Tom's story, I could get you to tell me what your own family experience is.
Well, I have bipolar disorder, and I had a severe depression, much like this gentleman's daughter did. My family at the time had really no understanding of how severely ill I was, and I hung myself too at age 15. At that point, though, I was obviously not on any kind of medicine. There wasn't medicine like SSRIs that existed then. And my family didn't really appreciate that I was having any more than the usual teenage problems. And now that I'm a mother, I have children who have this illness, and I've had a son that's had suicide attempts, and other children that have had, you know, psychiatric concerns over time. And I realize that the medicine is not what caused the problem. It was the underlying illness. And illnesses in children are very difficult to tell. And I know families are grieving, and I feel so sorry for this gentleman and what he and his family have all been through. But one case does not really reflect what is going on with research. What you really need is good, adequate research. And the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill has called upon the research community to do even more research to decide what's going on. But to ban medicine right now would essentially doom many children to die of illnesses that we know will be treated by antidepressant medicine.
Your son, Tony.
And so you don't want to ban things or restrict things or scare parents unnecessarily so they don't treat their children if there isn't a real problem out there.
I just want to go back, if I can, Doctor, to the story of your son, Tony. He ran away at one point. Are you making the case that these same antidepressants, in your view, may have or did save his life?
They absolutely saved his life. And what happened was he was on medicine at the time. He wasn't actually, at the time that he had that episode, he wasn't on, you know, Zoloft or any SSRI medication. He was on other medicine. But he was having symptoms. And whenever you treat children with an illness, it sometimes takes 4-8 weeks for the medicine to kick in. And so for a period of time of maybe 8 weeks, they're on medicine, but the medicine hasn't started to work yet. And the depression is, in a sense, still untreated. Also, many children who kill themselves in various studies have been found not to have antidepressants in their blood at the time, so that there's a suggestion, or maybe not enough, and there may be a suggestion that some people are intermittently compliant with their medicine. I'm not saying that's the case with this gentleman's daughter, but that certainly is another factor that confuses results a lot.
So, Tom Woodward, let me bring you back in here. When you look back to last summer and the warnings that the doctors and the medical health professionals gave you at that time, and you're trying to figure out what could have been better, was it simply a matter of not getting the full story from the doctors, or was there more to it than that?
Well, we didn't get the full story, that's for sure. But I hear what was being said about blaming the underlying illness instead of these drugs. And we'd also heard that these drugs don't take effect for 4 to 6 weeks, 4 to 8 weeks. But the reality is these drugs can affect people right away. We did learn that our daughter Julie was not metabolizing this drug properly. And I believe that there should be testing of individuals before they're given these drugs. People can react to penicillin if they have an allergy to
right.
it and can die. So these drugs are being given out indiscriminately. They're being given out for disorders that have nothing to do with depression, sadness. They're being given out to people because they have problems with heart disease, headaches, and they're just being prescribed too widely.
Now, some of the parents, I understand, Tom, at the FDA inquiry earlier this week in Washington were accusing the FDA itself of protecting the large drug companies. Are you among that group?
Well, that was one of the points I made. The drug industry has donated millions and millions of dollars in political contributions to the Bush administration. The current head of the FDA, his family, his mother, was involved with political fundraising in Texas, so they understand the impact of these dollars that are being donated. They had Daniel Troy, who's the chief counsel of the FDA, came in from the pharmaceutical industry, spent his career defending the pharmaceutical industry. There was one person from California, a politician from California, that said the FDA doesn't, the drug industry doesn't need to lobby the FDA anymore. They control it. So I am concerned about the efficacy of the process. I am concerned about the focus of the FDA right now, and that they're looking out for the interests of the American public and the American children first and foremost. And they're not taking too much into consideration the economic interests of these drug companies. And in some cases, these SSRI, these antidepressant drugs, are the biggest moneymakers of some of the most profitable corporations in the world. And we can't remove that from the process, unfortunately.
You, among others, will be watching to see what the FDA announces this summer and when its review is finished.
Very closely.
Tom, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Dr. Suzanne Vogel-Shabelia is going to remain with us for this hour. Dr. Joseph Glenmullen, a Harvard psychiatrist and author of Prozone Backlash, Overcoming the Dangers of Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, and Other Effective Alternatives, is also going to be with me here in the studio when we continue the conversation. But we do want to bring you in as well. Our number, once again, 1-800-423-TALK. Your thoughts about this issue, who's responsible, and where this country should go, whether or not the United States should be following more closely the British line of first banning before doing the review. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you join our conversation about antidepressants this year, particularly antidepressants and children, whether or not the prescription of antidepressants is something that is more dangerous than the good that the drugs can do. With me here in the studio, Dr. Joseph Glenmullen. He is a Harvard psychiatrist and author of a book, I'll get the title right this time, Prozac Backlash, Overcoming the Dangers of Prozac.
Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, and other effective alternatives. Doctor, it's good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And a reminder that Dr. Suzanne Vogel-Shabilia is also with us. She's a psychiatrist and child and adolescent policy chair for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, joining us from the studios of WDEQ in Pittsburgh. Now, Dr. Glenn Mullen, you were listening to Tom Woodward's story, to what Dr. Vogel-Shabilia had to say. Your thoughts on where we are with making sense of the safety of these drugs for kids?
Well, first of all, Dick, there is a very legitimate serious side effect of this drug that can make kids and adults suicidal, and it is akathisia. It's a severe
form. That's
what
Tom
talked about, that's correct, and he's
right.
It's a severe form of agitation that can make people feel abject terror. They're so agitated and irritable. The vivid descriptions of his daughter feeling she was being lifted off her bed are very typical of patients who get this. It's actually so well established with SSRIs, these antidepressants, that it's clearly described in the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the diagnostic bible for the profession. We know that there's a window of vulnerability, particularly in the first few weeks to a month when you go on it, just like Julie, who we heard described earlier, or when you increase the dose. We know how to treat it with other medications that stop the akathisia and the suicidality. We understand the brain chemistry of why drugs that boost serotonin would cause this.
But it's not so bad that you, for example, wouldn't prescribe these drugs to kids,
right? I prescribe these drugs. My point is you have to warn people. And I hear countless stories, like Tom told, of patients not being warned of this side effect. And it has been adamantly denied by the industry and drug advocates for a decade.
Dr. Vogel-Shabilia, what are we missing here? Are we missing a number of experts? Is the information being buried away too much? What's your view?
I mean, the word akathisia is just a syndromal classification. It's just describing a symptom or something that someone complains about. And really what I think may be happening in some people isn't that there's an akathisia from SSRI medicine per se. Really looking at akathisia in antidepressant treatment and looking at akathisia in children has not been well studied. I mean, in fact, there hasn't been in many studies any type of evidence that akathisia is a prominent and common concern. I think that when you look at restlessness with many types of medicine, you may get that report. But I think oftentimes what happens, too, is that kids who have other types of illnesses besides uncomplicated major depression, if they have anxiety or they have bipolar disorder, whenever you give anything that's stimulating, whether it's caffeine or other things, you may have some issue with anxiety being more prominent. Akathisia is what you usually think about with antipsychotic medicine. You know, that's the traditional kind of use of the word akathisia. And so I think that there's still a tremendous amount of difference in the scientific community about what constitutes akathisia.
You're saying that parents are getting enough information, that parents are getting all they need to know, though? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, it's just speculation at this point. I mean, the concern is you have a medicine. Since SSRIs have come out in the last 14 years, the rate of suicide in this country has dropped. And it's not because drug and alcohol use has gone down. It hasn't. There's a very strong epidemiological concern that SSRI medication is what has prevented a tremendous number of suicides. If you have a rare possible thing that may be due to medicine, may not be due to medicine, and needs to be studied further, you don't want to put a large warning label or ban the medicine and then have all these other people perish because the medicine isn't available or people, family members, are afraid to use it. So you don't want to put a warning on a medication unless you know that's exactly what's causing the problem.
Are we at that?
You know, I'm so glad you have Dr. Vogel on this show, because she's taking the industry party line on this, and it's blame the patient's underlying psychiatric conditions, discourage the media from looking at this side effect because it might frighten people away from treatment, and dismiss legitimate, serious case reports of this as anecdotes. Now, Dr. Vogel is here. She represents NAMI. You know, NAMI appears to your listening audience as an independent advocacy group for patients. But in fact, a large portion of NAMI's funding comes from the industry. In the late 1980s and early 90s, when Prozac was just coming on the market, Eli Lilly provided almost all of the funding for NAMI to have a huge campaign to defeat discrimination against treatment of psychiatric conditions and treatment with, guess what? Drugs. And they had a full-time Eli Lilly employee in their NAMI headquarters in Virginia working for them. Now, this is exactly the problem. I'm so glad you have her on the show, because this is the problem that we've all been trying to deal with for 10 years.
NAMI is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. Dr. Vogel.
Yes.
Are you being unfairly impugned here?
I've obviously been unfairly impugned, and I'm so glad that you have him on this phone, because he's saying what everyone always says when you say you're rushing to judgment and you may be killing a lot of people by denying them treatment, is people always look for some type of financial connection to things. NAMI has never taken money with any strings attached, and there's a tremendous amount of funding that comes into NAMI that is not pharmaceutical money. Additionally, I don't take pharmaceutical money in any way, shape, or form, and there's a tremendous number of other people that have had the exact same opinion that NAMI has had and I have had. And a lot of my views today really have nothing to do with NAMI. I mean, I'm a psychiatrist, I'm a mother, and a consumer of mental health services myself. Primarily where my opinion comes from.
We're not actually going to turn this hour into a conversation about what the National Alliance is or where the money comes from.
I think it's unfair.
And you've made your point. I appreciate it. But where I look at this, and I'm going back to what I said to Tom Woodward, I have to look at this from a layperson's point of view. And I see the regulators in Britain saying there's a problem here, that our trials show that those taking some of these antidepressants are three times more prone to suicidal thoughts or suicide than those who are on the placebo. They're so serious about that, Dr. Vogel, that they have said, let's not prescribe these drugs. And I think that's what parents in America are looking at and saying, well, what should we do? We're getting one message from the FDA and something else from, a respected Western regulation agency in Britain. What do you say to that?
Well, it's a mischaracterization of the UK data. In fact, a lot of the UK data came after there was a highly publicized media report about certain medicine and certain side effects. And they took basically adverse incident reports of people that called in or doctors that reported after this media blitz, and there was no control population. There was no population looking at how much violence or suicidality were in kids that weren't on antidepressant medicine. So actually, the UK data is significantly flawed. And when you take anecdotal results like, one person calling in saying my daughter killed himself or herself or himself or people that hurt themselves, all anecdotal information or case reports, even if you have a dozen or two dozen or four dozen, all that really should have you do is good research.
You're completely misrepresenting things. The BBC ran a very hard-hitting show, yes, it's true, on this side effect and withdrawal. And yes, they were flooded with stories from viewers. But the British equivalent of the FDA has taken their position based on clinical trials of the antidepressants. The companies were trying to get approval to market it to kids, which would have given them a 6-month extension on the whole patent. It was worth $1.5 billion. These are controlled studies. The data clearly shows our FDA has admitted that the data has what they're calling a signal of increased suicidality. You're completely misrepresenting things to claim that it was the emails that the BBC got. This was hard data.
We also have people on the line who have direct, specific experience with this. We want to make sure that they're a part of this conversation. Our number, 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Cape Cod now. And Sarah's joining us. Sarah, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to make the point, I am a 19-year-old female living on Cape Cod who is currently taking Zoloft. I've been taking it since I was 18, and it has worked extremely well for me. And I definitely understand the side effects, and of course, my experience is not necessarily the norm, but if I had not been taking this medicine, I would have had serious problems, and I really appreciate what it's been done for me. And then the other point I had is, I think one thing that this program might be missing a little bit is the fact that three of my friends, too, are also taking this medication. And those are just my friends. I know so many people on it. And I think another point is...
Just before you go on, Sarah, I'd like you to bring us back to the point that we were talking about in terms of what the possible side effects of this are. Neither you nor your three friends have suffered any of the suicidal side effects. That's one thing that you're telling, right?
Correct.
So what do you say about or to the people who say the dangers are real? Are you saying that we shouldn't make up our mind based on a story like Tom Woodward's any more than we should make up our mind based on a story like yours?
Well, one thing I would say is I think there's been a lot of focus on the parents, but not necessarily enough focus on the children taking this, that if they are experiencing this awful depression, perhaps they should have more responsibility on communication on their part and explaining what is happening to them and how they feel. Because although it is the parent's responsibility, it is also the person taking it who needs to understand what's going on with themselves.
You know, you really need to strike a balance here. You need a balance between acknowledging that a lot of people benefit from these drugs, take them, and say clearly that they help. But a small but significant number of people, it may be on the order of 1%, get this very serious side effect that can make people suicidal. And the whole issue here is warning, giving people information. You know, we have a website, ProzacBacklash.com. We get flooded with requests for information on this because people cannot get it from their doctors.
Did you get the information about, did you get the warnings, Sarah?
Well, to be honest, I was on another form of antidepressant, which I did have side effects from, but I recognized that they were not normal, and so I went to my doctor and told her, and she said, no, we should switch you.
But but did you get any of the warnings, or do you think that's a relevant question?
I do think I didn't get these kind of warnings. I was never told that it was possible that suicide mm-hmm. could be a side effect, and perhaps I should have been told that.
Dr. Vogel, I'm curious to hear from you on the percentage that we're talking about here. If I heard Dr. Glenn Mullen right, the side effect we're talking about can affect 1%.
We only have estimates because the industry has not funded the kind of exhaustive studies we need. But we have multiple studies, and the estimates range, you know, up to 3.5%.
So, Dr. Vogel, what should we do so we don't have these two sort of wildly disparate bits of advice here? What kind of research is required that hasn't been done?
There hasn't been studies that have looked at this issue more comprehensively and looked at the issue around children with a different diagnosis called bipolar disorder and looking at mood stabilizers and antidepressant medication.
The drugs aren't approved for either of those conditions.
Right. No, but what happens, though, is in reality,
90% of the prescriptions are.
Hang on a second. You're saying that the drugs are given to these people anyway. Is that right, Dr. Vogel?
Well, yes, but what I'm trying to explain, too, is that there's a tremendous amount of information out there that we need to get. But you don't want to jump and say something that's going to harm people. The American College of Neuropsychopharmacology is who I quoted about the UK study. So he quoted the BBC. I quote the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology Task Force report that had concerns about the UK data. They also looked at all the clinical trials of over 2,000 youth and found that there was no statistically significant increase in suicide attempts, self-harm, or suicidal thinking relating to SSRI use. And there hasn't been a study that has shown a tremendous amount of dangerous akathisia in children that has been out in the literature anywhere. Again, this is people speculation looking on people calling in with case reports. And so to jump to judgment could be possibly far more harmful than to get more information. And what the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill has called for is further research and further study to be able to have informed decision.
Do we
not
need more research?
Decision
absolutely. But the tragedy here is that there was a similar hearing by the FDA in 1991 about the same drugs with the same side effect. And if you read the transcript, 250 pages, they say repeatedly, we need more research. In fact, Eli Lilly had agreed at the time to do the specific kind of study that would be most helpful here. They developed the protocols, and they developed a more sensitive scale for suicidality. They never did it. The FDA didn't make the other drug companies, when they started testing their drugs, use this sensitive scale. So to be here 12 years later, hearing people like Dr. Vogel say
we need... Why are we depending on the drug companies to do the research?
Oh,
I
couldn't agree with you more. One of the huge scandals here is that, you know, she didn't say that the American College of Neuropharmacology said also in their report that they don't have access to the data that the British and the FDA came to their conclusions on. You know why? Because the industry is holding a lot of these unpublished studies as trade secrets. Now, it's absolutely an outrage that when you're talking about a lethal side effect in children, that anybody would be claiming that, you know, these are trade secrets. We, all the psychiatrists like myself, the media like you, we all need access to this.
So the FDA has said Columbia University has the next 6 months to take a look at the information and report back. Does that mean that this information that is proprietary information is going to be exposed or not?
Well, you know, first, it's hugely controversial that the FDA is doing that, reclassifying the data. There's a long history with this side effect that when the data gets reclassified, it gets altered. There's Paxil. When it came out, when they were applying in 1989 for approval for Paxil, if you look at the original data, there was a nine-fold greater incidence of suicidality in patients on Paxil versus the dummy pill, the placebo. In 1991, when this became an issue and the drug was still under consideration for approval, the FDA asked the manufacturer of Paxil, please give us a report on yours in particular. And one of the things that was waived at the hearing on Monday by one of the people who testified was that the data got changed. And all of a sudden in the 1991 report, it looks like there's no difference between Paxil and the dummy pill. And I won't go into the technicalities, but reclassification is very controversial.
I want to go back to our lines now. 1-800-423-8255. Cranston, Rhode Island. Peggy's with us. Peggy, thanks for calling.
Yes. I sort of want to inject a voice of reason here. And I think I don't know his name, the male expert there, was just saying some important things.
Dr. Glenn Mullen, Joseph.
Yeah. I only have anecdotal information. But what I see is a problem.
Are you a doctor or a nurse,
Peggy? I'm a clinical social worker. Okay. I have a psychotherapy private practice. So I see a lot of depressed people. And I've had an adult who had this very bad reaction to Prozac, and her doctor would not listen to her. Her doctor would not return her calls. He said, you got to give it time. You got to give it time. She was ready to jump out of a window,
right.
And she went to the emergency room. And finally, somebody listened to her, took her off it. She hadn't been suicidal before. She hasn't been suicidal since. I also know of...
Okay, but that's one case. What's your advice, Peggy?
My point is that people who say we don't accept anything until we have the scientific data cause a lot of problems. And there, I could name a number of things that have been rejected that were later proved by scientific data to be true.
Peggy, I'm going to have to take a short break here in a minute, but before I do, I want to ask you one more question, and that is if you were speaking to a parent who's listening to us now who's wondering whether or not these drugs should or shouldn't be taken, what are you telling that person?
I would say to try it and to trust your own instincts and your own judgment. And if you feel that there is anything that isn't right, then you go back and talk to the doctor and do something else.
And that's okay to do it with a GP? Do you need to go higher up the medical food chain for this?
Absolutely. You need a psychiatrist who works with these drugs all the time, and particularly if you have a child, a psychiatrist who works with children, because I think that experience is invaluable.
Thanks for your call, Peggy. Nice to have you on the program. Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Tell us what you think about the controversy over antidepressants being given to children. Are parents getting enough information? Do doctors know enough to give them the information that they need? And where do we find ourselves between the advice of the FDA and what's happening in Britain? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. With me on the program today, Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen, Harvard psychiatrist, author of Prozac Backlash, and Dr. Suzanne Vogel-Shabilia, psychiatrist and policy chair for child and adolescent policy chair, I should say, for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. And we're looking at the story which we were all looking at this week about the hearings in Washington, the FDA reviewing these antidepressants and wondering whether or not reports of the rates of suicide that have been noted in Britain and here in this country are serious enough to send out something more than just a warning. Dr. Vogel, I didn't get a chance to hear your response to what Peggy was saying. Peggy's saying, be careful. Just be really, really careful about these drugs.
I have no concern about questioning what she's doing. I agree with her completely. And I certainly want to see what happens in the next 6 months whenever the Columbia University gets more information. And I think we should wait for that. I think the bigger concern that she brought up and the most important thing is that she would like to have people who are children treated with antidepressants to see child psychiatrists. And there's a tremendous deficit of child psychiatrists in this country. We need over 40,000 child psychiatrists, and we have less than 7,000. And there's there's no way that you can just create 33,000 child psychiatrists. Probably for the next 10 to 15 or more years, there will be very, very few child psychiatrists. Yet all these children will have severe symptoms and need to be treated. So that unfortunately, family doctors and pediatricians do a tremendous amount of child psychiatry work. And the American Academy of Pediatrics is certainly looking into having child pediatricians and other people be able to do uncomplicated treatment for depression because there's nobody around in the psychiatric field. And what happens is that if you end up putting warning labels, you know, cavalierly or prematurely before all the data is in, and that's really what I personally think should be done. I'm not speaking for NAMI. I'm speaking for myself based on all the information that I know. Then I think what would happen is that we'll have family practitioners and pediatricians, because of the liability, being afraid to prescribe. Several of the people who gave testimony at the FDA hearings were trial lawyers who have a tremendous number of litigation cases going on with Prozac and Zoloft, people that want to sue either the pharmaceutical companies or their physicians over what's happened, whether there may not even be an effect related to the medicine in those cases. And so if primary care doctors, pediatricians, and family practitioners suddenly say, hey, I'm not comfortable writing about this because I may be sued or because there's this bad press, then you're going to have even more people not getting treatment.
Dr. Glenn Mullen, let me stop you there, Dr. Vogel. What do we tell then a primary care physician? What's that person, man or woman, supposed to do now?
First of all, 70% of prescriptions for antidepressants now are written by primary care doctors, and they don't know anything about this side effect. And to me, the most compelling piece of Peggy's story is the response that the patient got when she went to the doctor to try and talk about this. The doctor didn't know about it and was even hostile, said this couldn't possibly be true. And I can tell you, I hear that over and over and over again. When Prozac Backlash came out 3 years ago and I came on The Connection, the thing the staff said to me was, we can't believe all the hostile calls we're getting from the companies and drug advocates. What is this? And it's this side effect. I described this side effect in detail and how to treat it and how to diagnose it. And they don't want it discussed. And you meet a very hostile response when you try to. Now it's coming out because it's children and the efficacy isn't proven with kids anyways. And people are more concerned about kids. They're very concerned about kids.
But we're looking at the same set of facts. I don't think that you and Dr. Vogel are disagreeing, but it seems that where we do have disagreement on what do we do with the warning? I mean, it seems to me that if the primary care physicians, Dr. Vogel, I guess this is a question for you, if the primary care physicians aren't that well schooled, then the warnings really ought to be there. So they at least have access to that.
Well, there are clear warnings already that say that people can have an activation of anxiety, whether akathisia, the way
give me a break. The warning is buried in the fine print. We want a black box warning, and you know what that means. We want a black box
warning. I know what a black box
warning
means, but unfortunately, there's tremendous numbers of severe side effects with all medicine that are out there that you could say someone doesn't know about. In fact, family practitioners and pediatricians, the American Academy of Pediatrics, thinks that many people do a very, very good job. Most people do a wonderful job of treating uncomplicated depression in the office. Setting. And that's something that the American Academy of Pediatrics feels that is within their purview to do algorithms and to have other treatment. Unfortunately, what happens is that if you put a black box warning on every side effect that happened, you would have lots of people refusing life-sustaining treatment, life-saving treatment because of the warning. The warning is designed to be for something that has to really catch someone's eye whenever they do that. We don't even know if the akathisia that the other gentleman on the line claims to exist is really documented in any type of research data. It's his feeling, it's his impression, but it's not something that's globally known within the research community. And in fact, many people, including most of the eminent researchers in child and adolescent psychiatry, are not saying the same thing this gentleman is. But it's a viewpoint, and we acknowledge that viewpoint. We want to have good research first before we jump to something that could possibly
Let's be clear about one thing.
Lives.
One of the other crucial pieces of data that was presented to the FDA on Monday was that 90% of the prescriptions for these drugs for children are written for conditions that are not approved for the drugs. 90%. Only 10% for depression and OCD. Huge percentage for ADD, which is not approved. You've already mentioned manic depressive illness, which is not approved. Secondly, so we're not talking about treatments that have been established as valid scientifically for those 90%.
Secondly, clearly a mischaracterization.
The mandate to the FDA is to put on a warning if there's reasonable concern. This is just what we've seen for a whole decade, is people taking this kind of aggressive position. Say nothing. Don't warn patients. You might scare them. You know how terrifying it is to get this side effect? Talk about scaring people.
I want to actually come back to the whole off-label thing, but we're leaving an important component out of this conversation, and that's our callers. So let's go to Augusta, Georgia. Sabrina's joining us now. Sabrina, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you.
So what do you think?
Well, I'm concerned because I just had an incident happen to us. I have a 6-year-old that has Asperger's syndrome and also severe ADHD. He was on Metadate, and his doctor prescribed him Wellbutrin and Metadate. That day we had to pick him up from school. He was having heart palpitations and he could not breathe. An hour and a half after we picked him up and took him to the doctor, he was literally bouncing off the walls.
How long ago was this, Sabrina?
This was a week before the information came on the radio, on the TV about the England trying to ban those particular drugs for children, because there wasn't enough study.
So before that came on television, had your doctor, had anybody given you any warnings at what the Wellbutrin side effects might be?
No. I am familiar with the medication, but as far as a 6-year-old, no, they gave me no warning that this would happen.
So what did you do when you saw the news from Britain?
It made me angry. You know, we had to sit there and watch our child go through this reaction, and if we had kept them on it, they actually tried to get us to stay on it, and we said absolutely not. And, you know, we just are using the Metadate at the time, right now. But I feel like it was information that we needed to know. Actually, a resident that day said that she never mentioned, my physician never mentioned it, but the resident said there is a high suicidal rate with teenagers with Wellbutrin.
So if you had one message to give to the FDA as they puzzle out what their next step would be, Sabrina, what would that be?
A lot more research, and don't shuffle patients through. You know, and I worry about kickbacks and things like that. I think a lot of the physicians are so quick to want to prescribe a medicine, say, here, go for it, try it, bye. And it's a good luck, you know, thing as they're pushing you out the door. I think that's happening way too much. I think there should be a little more time and research in the products.
You know, I'd like to point out Sabrina's story is such a good one, because her 6-year-old had ADHD and Asperger's. Neither of those are diagnoses for which these medications are approved. And once again, you have a patient describing how when they went to the doctor said, oh, no, the drug just hasn't worked yet. Take more, which is going to make people worse. And again, we just need to educate doctors who are actually writing these prescriptions. We need to warn patients. You know, I'm a clinician, so I always come back to the one-on-one encounter. And I think, you know, the question that comes up in my mind is, if you were a parent and you were considering an antidepressant for your child, would you want to know something about this? Would you want to know something about the British concern, the FDA concern, the 10-year history of akathisia, how to treat akathisia, how important it is to get to the doctor right away? Or would you want to know nothing,
which
is what most people, that's about
their
end. I
want to go to Dr. Vogel on this for in a moment, but just before I do that, this whole question of prescribing a drug that has not necessarily been tested for that. Would you ever prescribe something, as they say, off-label, saying, well, maybe the FDA hasn't approved this drug for this condition, but I know a lot about it, and I think you should try it. That's off-label. Would you do that?
That's off-label, and it's very common in medicine.
Right.
But it's gotten completely out of hand. It's reckless
but
with
do
these
you do
drugs.
It? Are there
yes,
cases when you
I
do
it?
So you're not saying it's a bad practice.
It's not a bad practice, but when you're talking about 90% of the prescriptions for kids being off-label, something's seriously wrong.
Okay.
And even for depression and OCD, if you look at the unpublished studies and you put them together with the few published studies, there isn't efficacy if you average all the studies together for kids. And that's why this is really coming out, because it's children, because there isn't enough evidence for efficacy, and because now the industry data is showing increased risk, suicidality, aggression, hostility, all of this.
I want to go back to Dr. Vogel.
Well, I mean, that's a mischaracterization characterization to say 90% are off-label. And what happens is that many times children with other diagnoses like ADD and Asperger's have an incredibly high rate of depression. So they're prescribed the Zoloft or the Prozac or the Paxil because of the depression. So that's a gross mischaracterization. Also, another problem is that the other fellow here let that lady talk without pointing out, you know, if he'd been fair and balanced, that both Wellbutrin and Metadate have nothing to do with serotonin. SSRIs are what are being studied, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Wellbutrin has no serotonin effect. It works with dopamine. And Metadate is a Ritalin agent. Yet this woman has now heard this program today and thinks that somehow the case that's happened to her son is related to what happened with the SSRI investigation.
Okay. I'm not trying to make this more confusing. I'm trying to make it less confusing. Isn't it one of the drugs that is being reviewed by the FDA? Isn't it one of the antidepressants that's being reviewed by the FDA?
As far as I know, no.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not being.
It is. And what's
on
more,
my
because,
list, Wellbutrin and Celzone as SNRIs, which is a variation, right?
Clearly Dr. Vogel doesn't understand the biochemistry of this. Okay, so the reason, first of all, this is what's called a backlash in the brain. That's what I meant by Prozac backlash. The key chemical in the brain here is actually dopamine. Wellbutrin does affect dopamine, just as she said. But we now know that if you give drugs that jack up serotonin, you're going to get a backlash in the brain on dopamine, and that's why the SSRIs come into the loop here. And she's right. It's an older class of drugs, antipsychotics, that affect dopamine. It's any drugs that affect this group of neurotransmitters in the involuntary motor system in the brain, which is where this side effect occurs.
All right. Dr. Vogel, we're close to the end of the program here. I want you to leave us with the thought that you want stuck in our brain from this hour. What should come from the FDA now? Dr. Vogel.
I basically think that we shouldn't rush to judgment again. If we end up curtailing this necessary medicine that has saved tremendous numbers of people, we're going to have more people die than the possibility that this is something that is an effect that we don't know about yet. If you look, 80% of the people that kill themselves are people that are not treated adequately for their mental illness. And 90% of people that end up having some type of suicide event have a mental illness. So you're looking at people with mental illness who are generally not treated in our community already. It's hard to get a hold of a psychiatrist. It's hard to get adequate treatment. Anything that puts more barriers in will kill tremendously more people than the possibility that this is an effect that we don't know about yet.
You can make wonderful
arguments and skew and inflame people.
Absolutely for warning the public, educating doctors. Let's stop blaming patients' underlying psychiatric conditions. Let's stop blaming the victims and deal with the reality of this side effect.
Are we going to be closer to this summer? Are we going to get an answer from the FDA?
I hope so. Now Congress has demanded the studies from the FDA yesterday. If you were there, as I was on Monday, half the committee were pediatricians, and it was really the pediatricians who revolted and said, you know, something's going on here. So I think this is going to be the Enron of the pharmaceutical industry, an incredible corporate excess of the 90s.
Interesting. We'll be watching it. Thanks, Dr. Glenn Mullen, for coming in. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen, author of Prozac Backlash, Overcoming the Dangers of Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, and Other Effective Alternatives. Dr. Suzanne Vogel-Chevalier, nice to have you with us. Dr. Vogel is a psychiatrist in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.